Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, chapter 7, what Prahlad learned in the womb, text 17. Bhavatam api bhuyan me yadi shraddha dhate vacha vaisharadi di shraddata stri balanam chame yata. Translation. Prahlad Maharaj continued, "My dear friends, if you can place your faith in my words, simply by that faith you can also understand transcendental knowledge, just like me, although you are small children. Similarly, a woman can also understand transcendental knowledge and know what is spirit and what is matter." Purport. These words of Prahlad Maharaj are very important in regard to knowledge descending by the disciplic succession. Even when Prahlad Maharaj was a baby within the womb of his mother, he became fully convinced of the existence of the Supreme Power because of hearing the powerful instructions of Narada and understood how to attain perfection in life by bhakti yoga. These are the most important understandings in spiritual knowledge. Yasya deve para bhaktir yata deve tata guru tasyaite katita hyarta prakashante mahatmana. Unto those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master, all the imports of Vedic knowledge are automatically revealed. Svetasvatara Upanishad. Atas Sri Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Grayam Indre Sevon Mukhe Hijivado Swayameva Spuratyataha. No one can understand Krishna as he is by the blunt material senses, but he reveals himself to the devotees, being pleased with them for their transcendental loving service unto him. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Bhakti Mam Abhijanati Yavan Yashchashmi Tatvataha Tato Mam Tatvato Gyata Vishate Tadanantaram. One can understand the Supreme Personality as he is only by devotional service. And when one is in full consciousness of the Supreme Lord by such devotion, he can enter into the kingdom of God. Bhagavad Gita. These are Vedic instructions. One must have full faith in the words of the spiritual master and similar faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then the real knowledge of Atma and Paramatma and the distinction between matter and spirit will be automatically revealed. This Atma-tattva, or spiritual knowledge, will be revealed within the core of a devotee's heart because of his having taken shelter of the lotus feet of a Mahajan, such as Prahlad Maharaj. In this verse, the word bhuyat may be understood to mean, let there be. Prahlad Maharaj offers his blessings to his class friends, saying, also, become faithful like me. Become bona fide Vaishnavas. A devotee of the Lord desires for everyone to take to Krishna consciousness. Unfortunately, however, people sometimes do not have staunch faith in the words of the spiritual master who comes by the disciplic succession, and therefore they are unable to understand transcendental knowledge. The spiritual master must be in the line of authorized disciplic succession, like Prahlad Maharaj, who received the knowledge from Narada. If the class friends of Prahlad Maharaj, the sons of demons, were to accept the truth through Prahlad, they would certainly also become fully aware of transcendental knowledge. The words Vaishadadi refer to intelligence concerning the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is extremely expert. The Lord has created wonderful universes by his expert knowledge. Unless one is extremely expert, he cannot understand the expert management of the supreme expert. One can understand, however, if one is fortunate enough to meet a bona fide spiritual master coming in the disciplic succession from Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Mother Lakshmi, or the Kumaras. These four sampradayas, or disciplic successions of knowledge and transcendence, are called the Brahma Sampradaya, Rudra Sampradaya, Sri Sampradaya, and Kumara Sampradaya. Sampradaya vihinaye mantraste nishpalamata. The knowledge of the Supreme received from such a sampradaya or disciplic succession can give one enlightenment. If one does not take to the path of disciplic succession, it is not possible for one to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one understands the Supreme Lord through devotional service with faith in the disciplic succession, and then advances further, he awakens his natural love for God, and then his success in life is assured. Om Agana Timidandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So now we are hearing Prahlad's emphatic declaration. It's not about material impediments. It's not about what kind of body you have. The real focus is upon hearing from the proper source and applying what you hear. You see, in the Vedic understanding, hearing without application is not actually considered hearing. So when you read words like faith, Prahlad is saying, my dear friends, if you can place your faith in my words, simply by that faith, you can also understand transcendental knowledge, just like me. That faith is not like kind of a Western sense of, you just believe. Okay, Prahlad, we believe what you say, and then you just do whatever you like. That's not the Vedic understanding of faith. That's why, as we explained a few days ago, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that transcendental knowledge is like a fire that burns. And it's like a boat that transports you from one place to another. So application is contained within the Vedic conception of hearing and having faith. Not that I believe, but my actions are completely something else. I believe, but I don't apply what I hear. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Gyana Vigyana Triptatma Kutastho Vijitendriya. The sage is properly situated with controlled senses because of both jnana, wisdom, and vijnana, applied wisdom. Therefore, triptatma, the atma, the self, is satisfied. So when we hear Prahlad speaking about faith, we shouldn't inread cultural conceptions of the day that this means simply believe. Prahlad just wants us to believe in him. Okay, Prahlad, we believe in you. Now let's now let our senses just run wild and do whatever they like. No. Prahlad's presentation of faith that he's making to his school friends means apply it. Because remember, Kayadu, Hiranyakashipu's wife, she heard, but she had some difficulty in application due to attachment, due to material attachment. So Prahlad is asking for more than just the ordinary conception of belief, faith. He's asking for action. Similarly, Bhagavad Gita is an action book. That's why Krishna so ingeniously spoke it in such a crisis situation on the battlefield between two armies. In other words, there's nothing theoretical and beliefy about Bhagavad Gita. It's spoken in the most pressing circumstances, the most intense crisis. Krishna wants to show us that this is what material life is all about. It's one crisis after another. Actually, if you're smart, you understand that all of material existence is a crisis. The crisis started when the spirit soul started thinking that I am this body and mind, and I have a mission in life to please myself, separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is when the crisis actually began. And the rest is just a footnote. You can go through your life and sort out the different mini crises, but actually the whole of material existence is a crisis. How long will it take for us to realize that? Purification is required. Otherwise, because we're attached to the body and mind, automatically then we will be looking for fulfillment of the body and mind. And it seems so natural. Last night at a program, we were having a partial discussion of this subject. Someone asked, well, why the regular principles? Well, we can understand why there are three of them, but a fourth seems a little stringent, because shouldn't you kind of just indulge in your natural feelings? Shouldn't you just explore those feelings? In other words, you have a body, so, do your thing with the body. But if you consider that you're not the body, then why engage in activities that deepen your attachment for what you aren't? And as Prahlad Maharaj explains in his instructions, the indulgence in unrestricted sense gratification so intensely causes bodily identification that your spiritual consciousness obviously becomes damaged, becomes contaminated. So in this way, if we understand that our crisis is identifying with the body and mind, then we can start to take action. And this is what Krishna presents to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna is talking about the crisis of the battle. Oh, we can't fight. Look at this. Relatives, friends, teachers. It'll destroy society. There'll be no more dharma. There'll be no more families. And what does Krishna respond by saying? My dear Arjuna, you haven't pinpointed the real crisis. Let's go deeper. The real crisis is your identifying with the body and mind. That's why Krishna told him, asochan of asochastam, pragyavadam shabhasase. You're speaking big words, but you actually don't know what you're talking about. As Srila Prabhupada would always point out, in an indirect way, Krishna told Arjuna that he was a fool. In this way, Krishna actually launched what is known today partially. Krishna partially launched what is known today as Indian culture, in which you never say things directly when you want to get on someone's case. So Krishna basically called Arjuna a fool, but he said instead, no intelligent person speaks like this. It's actually very cultured, and we should remember that. The next time we want to correct someone, no intelligent person does like this. It's a very genteel and intelligent way of speaking. Whereas many of us are accustomed to whatever's in the mind comes out on the tongue. And of course, straightforwardness does help. But Krishna's also being straightforward, but in a very eloquent way. At the same time, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has very incisive and very dynamic points he's making about the fate of the conditioned soul, the destiny of the conditioned soul, what material nature is doing to us, and how we're subjected to suffering life after life. So this Bhagavad Gita is a complete handbook for transporting someone from one place to another place. Where do you know one book in the world that can do all that? Scholars, they fuss about, well, no one really knows who wrote this book. No one really knows who Krishna is. It could be that Bhagavad Gita is a compilation of different speakers, because after all, it's so brilliant. It's hard to accept that one person can just speak such a cohesive treatise. So no doubt it was cobbled together from different personalities, different intellects. They don't understand the supreme expert, as Prabhupada writes here. Unless one is extremely expert, he cannot understand the expert management of the supreme expert. One can understand, however, if one is fortunate enough to meet a bona fide spiritual master coming into succession. So again, we get to this subject of parampara. What is the big deal about parampara? Why is it that a parampara is necessary for me to understand something? Isn't this requirement just some kind of folklore, some kind of cultural artifact? After all, you've got an intellect, I've got an intellect, everyone's got an intellect. You just apply your intellect, you understand. What's the problem? The problem is that there is such a thing as illusory energy, and that illusory energy belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And you can't rise out of that illusory energy unless Krishna allows you. So it's really hard for us to accept that we are controlled. We think that we're sufficiently seeing things as they are. Just think about that. When it comes to my life, I may not know everything, but I'm sufficiently seeing things in a way that I can make progress. I mean, who knows everything? But what I do know about myself and my surroundings and my situation is enough for me to make proper decisions. After all, I'm not a little child. I'm a mature adult. So where do we get this confidence from that we actually know enough and we're seeing enough to make proper decisions? In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna pulls that rug out from under Arjuna. You don't know what you're talking about. Where these impurities come from? And then Krishna gives Arjuna a lecture about how he's not the body. And that's what Prahlad Maharaj is going to do in the coming verses. He's going to lecture his friends about the difference between matter and spirit. And he's going to conclude that lecture about entanglement in material life by saying, my dear friends, of all the different processes for potentially freeing you from material entanglement, I recommend the one given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Prahlad acknowledges different sages come up with different methods to try to get free from material entanglement. Indeed, although such intelligence doesn't exist today, very rarely, you with your material intelligence can figure out that there's an all-pervading spiritual energy, Brahman. And you could even figure out that by merging with that all-pervading spiritual energy, you can become free from material existence, at least temporarily. You can figure that out with your intelligence. Not the kind of intelligence that exists today, but in the Vedic age, sages could speculate. That's why we have Partially, we have a hard time understanding what is speculation. What's the big thing about no mental speculation? It's part of the reason for our being down on mental speculation is that in times when human beings were much more intelligent, they could mentally speculate the existence of Brahman, the all-pervading spiritual energy. And they could mentally speculate persons like you read in Chaitanya Charitamrita, these extraordinary Mayavadis, like Prakashananda Saraswati, others. They could actually, their intelligence was so sharp compared to human beings today because they practiced austerity. And to some degree, they took shelter of the Vedas, although with a twisted conclusion. So it is possible to speculate that there is an all-pervading spiritual energy. And Prahlad Maharaj says, yeah, there are many different processes for getting, for trying to get free of material existence, but here's the most effective one, the one personally given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we see that personalism is so important. Basically, our lack of understanding the importance of parampara is because we don't understand the supreme absolute truth is personal. Krishna is a person, and so he has his personal ways of making himself known. But if you just ignore Krishna's personalism, then naturally you think, well, I make the way by which everything can be known. It's all up to me, and you have your way, you have your way, I have my way. This is impersonalism. You wouldn't want to be treated like that. We're just tiny, tiny little creatures. But we wouldn't want someone to come up to us and say, well, you know, I can understand you anywhere I like, you know. This person sees this in you, that person sees that in you, whatever, you know. You feel very offended. Wait a minute, I'm me, and I have my own personal likes, and I have my own personal attributes. And I could, if you're really sincere, I could tell you how you can best know me. No. Any way anyone chooses, they'll know you. You feel so offended. Yet we want to do that to Krishna. Why? It's so important that Krishna has given a particular way to know him. He can't do that. Any way you like is fine. This is arrogance. So once you understand that arrogance, then you can start to perceive why Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita are so heavy on mental speculation. It is a form of arrogance. Denying the personal qualities of the supreme goal and then saying, well, we can just approach any way we like. Whatever way you want, that's fine. It all gets you there somehow. All roads lead to the same destination. Many of us might have said things like that or read things like that. But, as I often explain, to make such a statement implies you have superior knowledge. For you to say all roads lead to the same destination, what does that mean? It means you're up in a helicopter and from your superior viewpoint, you can see all the roads merging, supposedly at the same destination. So when someone says like that, all roads, all paths lead to the same goal, then ask them, oh, please, from your high position, tell us what that goal is, because you see all the roads leading there. What is it? Oh, well, you know, come on. It can't be put into words. Those who know don't say. Those who say don't know. They immediately retreat to something fuzzy like that. So, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Yeyata mam prapajyante tams tataiva bhajamya. Mamavatma anuvartane. Everyone's following my path in all respects. But that doesn't mean that just do whatever you like. Krishna is saying, yes, everyone is on my path, but he's also pointing out that there are different stations, there are different directions, there are different circumstances on his path. Yes, if you absorb yourself in material life, you're on Krishna's path, but he doesn't want you in that, to be situated in that way. He wants you to be on the spiritual freeway. He doesn't want you on the material freeway. If we are personalists, we take instruction from the supreme destination, personality of Godhead, how to attain Him. Or sometimes people say, well, you know, all the religions, all the spiritual paths, they're like different visions of the same thing. You know. Let me give the example, like the blind men, the five blind men touching an elephant. So one blind man's touching the trunk of the elephant. He's saying, well, I know what an elephant is. An elephant is like a long hose. Another blind man touches the tusk of the elephant and says, I know what an elephant is. An elephant is like a big tooth. So in this way, each blind man, the proposal is, says, he's just touching only one part of the elephant and conceptualizing what the whole elephant is. So similarly, people say all religions are just different approaches to that same supreme absolute truth. Each religion just touches a particular aspect. So therefore, why should I follow any spiritual path? Because they're all incomplete and they're all just getting some tiny aspect of the supreme absolute truth. But you see, in order to make that statement that all religions are just like the five blind men touching different parts of the elephant and taking one part to be the whole, for you to say that, that means you've got to know what the whole picture is. You have to know what an elephant is. So then you ask such a person, okay, tell me what is the elephant? You say all religions are just presenting different aspects of the same absolute truth. What is the absolute truth? Oh, well, you can say what an elephant is, and therefore you can point out each blind man is touching a different part of the elephant. All right, you say that's what all the different spiritual paths are like. So tell us what is the complete whole, the Om Purnam. So then we can see how we're all just touching different parts of that supreme absolute truth. Of course, they can't give knowledge of the complete whole. So Prahlad Maharaj is stressing parampara as an active principle, not just as a cultural artifact or folklore, item of folklore. And this is what Krishna presents in Bhagavad Gita. Sevaya maya chada yoga prokta paratana. Bhakto sime sakha cheti rahasyam yetaruttamam. Arjuna, I'm going to teach you this mystery of the science of the self and the supreme self and their relationship. I'm going to teach it to you. Why? Because you have personal qualifications. You are my devotee and you're my friend. Therefore, you can understand this transcendental mystery. So you might say, well, what's the big deal? If you want to understand something, you understand something, whether you are that person's friend or devotee or not. This is impersonalism. Because the supreme absolute truth is the personality of Godhead, you have to do things His way to understand Him. And this is what we resent. And therefore, we're always coming up with questions like, well, why does it have to be like this? And why do I have to behave like that? Why these four rules? I mean, all four of them. And why? We always come up with protests like that because actually we're tinged by impersonalism to various degrees. We won't live our personal relationships like that. If you're living with someone, you can't ignore that person's personal ways of doing things, personal desires. You have to take all that into account. Otherwise, the relationship doesn't exist. Yet we want to do that to Krishna. It's so amazing. So Prahlad Maharaj is telling his friends, little friends, there's no material barrier to anyone understanding, experiencing transcendental knowledge if they go about it in the right way. So in this case, he's talking about children. He's talking about women. He said, anyone. And he's repeating in another way what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Anyone can go back to Godhead if you overcome your particular material impediments. And every body, every material body has a material impediment. Prahlad happens to be talking about some particular bodies that have material impediments. It doesn't mean other material bodies are free of impediments. Look at the poor men, for example, especially in the age of Kali. You know, when a boy reaches the age of 15 or 16, the male hormone testosterone increases tenfold. That's enough to, you know, it drives you crazy. Tenfold. That's an impediment. Tell me that's not an impediment. All the men here can remember, you know, before they were 10 or 11 years old, how innocent and carefree life was. Right? And then what happened when you were 12 or 13? Impediment. Testosterone, the male hormone, shoots up tenfold, and all of a sudden you see the world in a completely different way, and you're ready to complicate your life. You're ready to go through a whole ordeal. Suddenly, you know, the girl who lives next door doesn't look so foolish anymore. And you're ready to lay down your life in combat for her. So this is an impediment. And from the age of 16, in a young man, the testosterone doesn't stop there. It goes on up. It shoots on up to your 21. And by the time you're 21, you're a walking, blazing inferno. Isn't that an impediment? So that's what's driving all. That's what drives the men, especially in the age of Kali. They have no sense control. They have no knowledge. And so, therefore, they're just walking forest fires. And from the age of 21, the testosterone very slowly declines. Very slowly. Basically, in other words, the men are hung up about a certain thing for practically all their life. Isn't that an impediment? Now, we'll talk a little material science here. Scientists, they claim that one reason for relationship disharmony is that one of the genders loses interest in a certain activity before the other gender. This is what neuroscientists say. They say that so much relationship disharmony is caused by the fact that, generally speaking, women lose interest in the relationship in a certain activity more quickly than the man does, if the man ever does lose interest. So therefore, this causes relationship imbalances. So their solution that they're starting to talk about is to recommend injections of testosterone for the women so that they maintain their drive in a certain way, and that way people can have healthy relationships and live happily ever after. So the point is, everybody has impediments. You look and see you have a material body, that's an impediment. So Prahlad happens to be talking about the impediments caused by a child's body, the impediments caused by a woman's body. But there's no reason for the men to get proud and puffed up. Oh, especially in the age of Kali, who can become proud? When Bhagavatam says, Kalo Shudra Sambhavam, or Bhagavatam quotes that in the age of Kali, everyone is born low class and less. Prahlad is making the point, though, that if you take shelter of Krishna's personal way, that's the best way for becoming free of Maya and attached to the Supreme Absolute Truth. Later in this chapter, you'll read that a very nice definition of yoga. Yoga means that you're entangled in material life due to ignorance, and then you follow a process that brings you out of that crisis of entanglement. That is yoga. And this is exactly what Bhagavad Gita does. So on this day for stressing, distributing transcendental knowledge to the whole world, it's a good day for remembering that definition of yoga. Not just physical exercises, breathing exercises, but yoga recognizes you're in a crisis. You're in material entanglement caused by ignorance. So the yoga process recognizes that crisis and then by its process brings you out of material entanglement. That is yoga. Prahlad is being the most affectionate to his friends, and by our efforts to distribute transcendental knowledge, we are being the most affectionate to people. Sometimes that's not appreciated. Children, when they're little, how much do they realize what the parents, if they have good parents, what the parents are doing for the child? When you were a 4 or 5 year old child, did you appreciate how your father's working so hard to, how your mother's working so hard, how they're, if they're good parents, how they're trying to take care of the child, care for the child in every way? No, little kids don't know that. But as you become more aware, as you become older, you understand that. Similarly, people today, not many understand the extraordinary value, the inconceivable value of these books. But as their consciousness becomes uplifted, when they hit some particular crisis, they'll think more deeply. So we have to give people a chance to grow. We shouldn't be discouraged. They just don't appreciate these books. How do I know they're going to read them? You know, Krishna has this whole material existence set up to provoke people to turn to transcendental knowledge. Maybe it doesn't happen when you're looking, but it could happen in the future. We're in this effort to distribute transcendental knowledge, not just for this lifetime. We're seeking to change the entire flow of material existence. That's how extraordinary the Mahajans are, like Prahlad Maharaj. They want to take on all of material existence. This is what we remember so vividly about Srila Prabhupada. He took everything on. he didn't duck anything. He was ready to take on all the entire material existence and free the conditioned soul by giving the topmost knowledge. So where can you find in this world any books more wonderful than Srila Prabhupada's books? Where? It's been how many years since his departure? 35 years or so. Nothing has ever come close to the scope, the comprehensiveness, the affection, the love, the penetration displayed in Srila Prabhupada's books. That is karunika. That's love. That's affection. Not everyone understands that now, but it doesn't mean they'll never understand it. Srila Prabhupada would often tell us, one day people will come to understand what valuable treasures they have in the form of these books. One day they'll understand that these books help to save humanity from its darkest hour. So this is karunika. This is affection. And just as Prahlad is speaking to his friends, similarly, we read in the purport, a devotee of the Lord desires for everyone to take to Krishna consciousness. Taking to Krishna consciousness means doing things Krishna's way. Recognizing that the process given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the best process. Because the goal is personal, and so that goal personified says, this is how I want you to come to me. You come to me through parampara. You do like this, you do like that. And because We recognize that the Supreme Absolute Truth is personal. We are very receptive to hearing the personal ways for attaining the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we'll stop here and ask any questions or comments from Senior Vaishnavas. On this day, for especially stressing the distribution of transcendental knowledge, which gives everyone a chance to get over the material impediments of their body. The children can get over their impediments if they're sharp like Prahlad or follow in the footsteps of Prahlad. The women can get over their impediments. And yes, the men can also get over their impediments. Remember that testosterone. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.